Okay, I will call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 2:34 p.m. on Friday, May 12, 2023. Present today, we have Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Stapp, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Kronk, Representative Ortiz, Representative Cologne, myself, Co-Chair Foster. And before we start, just a reminder, folks can mute their cell phones. This afternoon, we'll take up amendments for both House Joint Resolution 2, which is the Constitutional Amendment on Appropriation Limit, and also HB 38, which is the Appropriation Limit, the statutory side of that. So after amendments, if it is the will of the committee, we'll move the bills out of committee. Before we go into amendments, awaiting some of our members, maybe I would ask Representative Stapp if you could just give a real quick summary of the constitutional and statutory bills, and then we'll jump right into it.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster, members of the Finance Committee. So as you recall, HB 38 and HGR 2 are revisions to the current statutory and current constitutional appropriation limits that the state has had and enforced since the early 1980s. The concept behind both the statutory spending limit and the constitutional resolution are what I believe is to correct a problem that exists in our existing appropriations limit. On the constitutional limit regarding the existing appropriation limit, that has proved ineffectual, as demonstrated several times throughout the presentation. As noted by not only myself, but the Legislative Finance Director, the existing appropriation constitutional limit is effectively near half the state's total gross domestic product. It's around $11 billion. Even if this body were to add pretty much every possible broad-based tax known to man, I don't think we would be able to generate an additional, $11 billion to spend. And therefore, my argument is the current appropriation limit is, inadequate as far as the purpose that it was designed when it's at its inception. Also, we discussed there's a provision in the Constitution that states that one-third of that appropriation limit should be reserved for capital appropriation. As demonstrated again by our Legislative Finance Director throughout meetings, that provision has not been always adhered to as well. So again, the purpose behind the next two bills and the amendments that I'm going to be offering is to kind of try to improve upon process and structural reform in our state. So that's a pretty quick summary.
Great. Okay, thank you very much. So with that, let's just take a brief at ease. Or actually, if we've got questions, Representative Josephson.
Yes, thank you, through the chair, for the sponsor. The idea of limiting operating expenses, I think you talked about, Representative Stapp, the value in having more money to go towards savings. But how would we be assured of that? How do we know that more money wouldn't go, for good or ill, to larger PFDs?
Representative.
PFDs are not subject to the cap.
Representative Stout.
Through the chair to Representative Josephson, I think I will solve that question when I offer my drafted amendments.
Great. Representative Josephson, any follow-up?
Yes. Your proposals don't concern themselves with population and inflation directly. I understand they do secondarily or sort of, I guess, inadvertently through GDP. But aren't population and inflation, they impact the private sector? And so that there is a correlation there.
Representative Stout?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Representative Josephson, through the chair to Representative Josephson. Yeah, so inflation certainly impacts the private sector. Inflation is also a metric that is calculated inside of real GDP. Population is certainly something that, in theory, the more people you have, the better economic output you have. You can see that. In different countries, especially when you look at how wealthy countries are, typically countries with more population have total gross economic output. As far as modeling population, I would say as far as the population aspect of the spending cap doesn't really have any in merit on changing it. This body actually looked at modeling population-based spending caps in a previous legislature, and it doesn't really make much of a difference regarding the spend. The inflation aspect of that is generally the key driver, so that's how I would answer that.
Thank you. Representative Josephson, and then we'll do a brief at ease. Representative Josephson.
Representative Stamp, I'm told that a common definition of GDP would include government spending, but yours doesn't do that. Am I right about that?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Josephson, that is correct. It's real GDP minus government spend.
Just to follow up, So you're not your bill and resolution are not GDP bills then, correct? There's some alternative to that.
Through the chair, to Representative Josephson, I don't think I would say that. I would say that when you are looking at a control mechanism and limitations, right, it's important that you factor out a lever that you could effectively abuse the limitation, right? So the argument about, I mean, I can handle the argument about factoring out government spend as far as a direct correlation with a spending cap in a handful of ways. I would typically articulate that the best way is, if I want to make sure that I can't get more than a couple of cookies out of the cookie jar, I shouldn't have the cookie bakery in my back oven. So,
Steve.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, okay, thank you. Thank you, Representative Staff. With that, we're going to take the BPDs. Okay, House Finance back on record at 2:44 p.m., so we'll go ahead and get started with the amendment process. And so, again, we are on House Joint Resolution 2, Constitutional Amendment on Appropriation Limit. So with that, Representative Stapp, if you could move your amendments.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I would actually like to roll Amendment 1 to the bottom and move Amendment 2.
Okay, so without objection, we'll roll Amendment Number 1. And that takes us to Amendment Number 2. Is there an objection?
Yes.
Okay, and that we have an objection. Representative Stapp.
All right. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair, to the members of the Finance Committee. So throughout the debate on this topic, I've been asked several times, given the nature of the permanent fund dividend appropriation, if I would look to include the permanent fund dividend as subject to appropriation limits under the cap. So this amendment and most of the forthcoming amendments are going to make these structural adjustments to the spending appropriation limit to reflect that, as well as change the appropriation limits upward so that both of the things that fall under the statutory limit and the constitutional limit can reflect incorporation of any type of permanent fund dividend amount. And I'll explain that more in depth later, but it does require the passage of the subsequent amendments in order to achieve that. There's a slide in the handouts that I gave folks regarding the amendments that reflect the new spending appropriation limit, both HB 38 and the current HDR 2 that we're referencing. So with that, that is the purpose of Amendment Number 2. It is to move the permanent fund dividend appropriation subject to the appropriation limit itself.
Great, thank you. Any discussion on Amendment Number 2? Representative Hannon, then Ortiz.
Thank you, Chair Foster. And I guess I'm just struggling to understand the language construction, because as I am reading it side by side, it appears to me that the word dividend does not appear there any longer. And so I am trying to understand if that's the intent, or by excluding the word dividend, that you think that implies they're included. And so it's...
Representative Stapp.
Through the chair, to Representative Hannah, I'm going to, can you maybe articulate that a little bit better for me? I quite understand.
Chair Foster, so my understanding from your narrative, and I'd heard it described as that Amendment 2 was to include permanent fund dividends in the spending cap, but my read of this amendment between what we are deleting on line 6, which is where the word dividend first appears, we're deleting that and then inserting it with the words to the Alaska Permanent Fund. And again, the word dividends being deleted. So I am trying to understand how dividends are covered in that amendment.
Yeah, give me a brief at ease if you could. Brief at ease.
House Finance back on record at 2:49 p.m. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Foster, through the chair to Representative Hannon. So I had to do a little concurring with my wonderful staff folks to make sure that we did draft and indeed draft this properly. We did. So effectively what this requires is deletion of the language that is currently not subject to the cap, and then inserting to the Alaska Permanent Fund, which would effectively make any appropriation for a permanent fund dividend subject to the cap.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Probably missing it here. It's probably right in front of me. But on line 5, and of course the underlying purpose of amendment number 2, to include the appropriations for the cost of managing the Alaska Permanent Fund. Do we know what kind of numbers we're talking about there in general?
Through the chair to Representative Ortiz, that's another one of my amendments. That cost for management fees for Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation is about $200 million. That makes sense, if that's the nucleus of the question.
And just for clarification, thank you, Mr. Chair. And those are like direct GF costs. They're not costs borne by the earnings of the fund itself or anything like that.
Through the chair to Representative Ortiz, my understanding is these are effectively the management fees that the Permanent Fund Corporation itself takes off the investment fund itself and not a GF appropriation. So that's the reason for the exemption. It's not a GF appropriation. It's the fee structure that they take off the fund itself to manage the assets.
So the effect of... I'm sorry.
Hello. You're good.
Thank you. So the effect of the amendment is not to include those costs, but to exempt those costs.
That is correct.
Got it. That makes some sense.
Okay. Further questions on amendment number 2? Hearing none. Wrap up, Representative Stout.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Well, I said, my intent here is to try to make a better bill that is more acceptable for some of the feedback that I heard. I'm going to try to do that in these series of amendments. So I would, taking the comments of members on the Finance Committee and other members in the body that I've talked to, I hope that you support the amendment. But my heart's not going to break if you don't. So thanks.
I have a brief at ease.
Brief at ease. House Finance back on record at 2:55 p.m., but I'd like to note that we have former Representative Chuck Dignan in the office, in the audience. I asked him where on the House floor he sat back when he served in the 7th legislature in 1971-72 and then 8th legislature in 73-74. And it sounds like it was on the right side, about three rows back. You're sitting in the gallery looking out towards the speaker's dais. So, interesting. But, thanks for joining us today. With that, yes, Representative Josephson.
Through the chair for the sponsor of the amendment. As I read this, you are no longer accepting, with an EXC, accepting permanent fund dividends from the limit. They would then be subject to the limit. But you are accepting any monies. Clearly, the quarter for the royalty would remain. But, for example, we have seen over there against the wall a large $4 billion check that was appropriated from the earnings reserve. The governor forgot to veto it, he said, to the corpus. And that would not be part of our limit. Obviously, that would be accepted from the limit under the bill, correct?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, my understanding is you're talking effectively about the action of inflation proofing. Is that basically what you're asking me?
Through the chair, yes. I mean, this went beyond inflation proofing.
Okay. Yes. Through the chair, Representative Josephson, my understanding is that action would not be subject to the appropriation limit, but I'd happily defer to the legislative legal drafter to explain that question. I think they are online, and that is going to be Marie Marks.
Ms. Marie Marks, if you're online, can you put yourself on the record?
Yeah, absolutely. For the record, this is Marie Marks with Legislative Legal Services, and I believe the question was, would appropriations for inflation proofing under Amendment 2 be excluded from the calculation of the appropriation limit because of the language appropriations to the Alaska Permanent Fund? And in my opinion, yes, because that would be an appropriation to the Alaska Permanent Fund.
And just if I might be especially clear,
Josephson,
through the chair, Ms. Marks, if for some reason the budget didn't use the words inflation proofing, but it simply said an appropriation was made to the permanent fund in the amount of $4 billion, as happened twice, that would be accepted from this draft resolution number 2 as well, correct?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, correct. Every appropriation has a from and a 2. And so it would be the language that would say, to the Alaska Permanent Fund. Correct. And that would fall under this Amendment 2 language that includes appropriations to the Alaska Permanent Fund.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions on Amendment number 2? And we had, I believe you did wrap up. I don't know if you want to add any more comments or sense out.
No, I think I'm good. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster.
Okay. Is the objection maintained, Representative Hammond? The objection is removed. Do we have any other further objections? We have an objection. Would you like to speak to your objection? Otherwise, we can go to vote. Okay, thank you, Representative Tomaszewski. So with that, Madam Clerk, if you would please call the roll on Amendment number 2.
Representative Tomaszewski?
No.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Hannon? Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Ortez?
Yes.
Representative Colomb?
Yes.
Representative Kronk?
Yes.
Representative Stapp?
Yes.
Co-Chair Edgman?
Yes.
Co-Chair Johnson?
Yes.
Co-Chair Foster?
No.
9 yay, 2 nay.
And so on a vote of 9 yeas to 2 nays, Amendment number 2 has been adopted. So with that, we will next move to Amendment number 3, Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I move Amendment number 3.
Okay. We have an objection, Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. So after discussing with the Permanent Fund Corporation, actually referencing the point that Representative Ortez had brought up in reference to the previous amendment, it's actually referencing Amendment 3, the costs that the permanent fund corporation takes from the fund itself to manage the assets. There was a dispute under my bill, as currently read, in the permanent fund corporation that those costs were not exempted from the cap. This amendment would ensure that they are exempted from the cap. That is about $200 million-ish. That amount fluctuates based on how well the performance of the fund goes, you know. So that cost for management costs that the permanent fund corporation itself utilizes, it was my intent to have exempted from the cap, and this amendment would ensure that would be existed. It would be exempted from the appropriation limit.
Okay, Representative Josephson.
Question to the chair for Representative Staff. Since that is, although a unique appropriation, a part of the cost of, quote, doing business for the state, why would that be accepted and not the cost of employing teachers, which is also the cost of doing business for the state?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, so this pot of money is not an effective appropriation that we in the legislature make from general funds, as opposed to all other operating capital expenditures. This money is utilized by the Permanent Fund Corporation itself. We have the basis points conversation. This is effectively the cut they take for managing the fund. So that's the purpose, because it's not subject to legislative appropriation, at least currently.
Follow up. I understand all that through the chair, Representative Staff, but that's a fairly new phenomenon. We could undo that. I think it, just in the last 5 years, this concept of the management fees, I could be wrong about that, mind you. Wouldn't this give this outlay an advantage over every other appropriations outlay in the operating budget?
Through the chair, Representative Justin, I don't think I would say that would give it an advantage. I mean, in theory, you know, that money comes out of the earnings reserve of the fund itself. So you could, as of this body currently stands, we could easily appropriate all of the earnings reserve account with a simple 21 vote majority, and or rather 21-11 in both bodies. I would say that things that existed for a long time in the state's history, like the dividend itself not being subject to legislative appropriation, was that way for most of my entire life. But if the goal is to look for structural change, to be able to move our state toward the future, that was started with the structured POMB drop years ago in the legislature, which was also a new idea. I would argue that if we're going to continue to move forward with structural reform, this would be one of those ideas. However, if we decide to change direction in a future, you know, manner, I mean, you were just subject to the GF appropriation rather than management fees. That makes sense.
Okay, Representative Benjamin.
Yeah, so maybe I'm missing something here, but we just approved amendment number 2, 9-2 votes. So the way the bill would read, line 5 and 6 would be accept to the Alaska Permanent Fund Appropriations Revenue, so on and so forth. Amendment number 3, I'm just wondering, maybe the bill drafter can help me understand how this works sort of semantically. Because again, line 6, it starts now, to the Alaska Permanent Fund. How would that read? I see appropriations for the cost of managing the Alaska Permanent Fund. How does that phrase fit in there?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Benjamin, I'm going to defer to our wonderful folks at the Legislative Legal and drafting these amendments on my behalf to make sure that the conforming language changes are reflected properly. So, Ms. Marks, I wonder if you could answer the co-chair's question.
Ms. Marks?
Yes. Again, for the record, this is Marie Marks with Legislative Legal Services. And so what the amendment would do would be on page 1, line 6, following the word dividend, it would insert appropriations for the cost of managing the Alaska Permanent Fund. So the intro would read, except for appropriations for Alaska Permanent Fund dividends, comma, appropriations for the cost of managing Alaska Permanent Fund, comma, appropriations to the Alaska Permanent Fund, and so on. The appropriation shall not exceed, and then it follows through the rest of the amendment language.
Follow up, Representative Edgman.
I'm looking at the one attorney around the table. He seems to have a quizzical look on his face, too. I'm wondering if Ms. Marks...
Representative Josephson?
Ms. Marks, who's one of our most talented attorneys and has my confidence, But she kept saying the word dividends, and I think we deleted that word.
Yes, through the chair, that was my understanding as well.
Ms. Marks?
Through the chair, to the chair, Marie Marks with Legislative Legal Services. If the committee makes sure that you give Leg Legal authority to make conforming and technical changes, then we will go ahead and look at all the amendments together and make sure that it reads in a logical and grammatically correct manner.
Okay. Any Representative Edgman?
So if we're, and I'm not a grammarian by any chance, but if we're missing an article like for or the, Leg Legal will insert that?
And I'm quite not sure which representative was that. I apologize. But through the chair, the representative asked the question. That is correct. We will add any missing articles or other aspects of grammar to make sure it works.
Because,
Representative Edgman,
Chairman, the way with the passage of Amendment Number 2, it reads, it doesn't seem to conform. It seems more than it's just the mere, you know, the or for that needs to be put into it. Because line number 6 starts after passing Amendment Number 2 to the Alaska Permanent Fund, and then Amendment Number 3 says appropriations for the cost of managing the Alaska Permanent Fund.
Ms. Marks?
Chair Representative Edmonds. So reading them together, it would probably read, except for appropriations to the Alaska Permanent Fund, comma, appropriations for the cost of managing the Alaska Permanent Fund, comma, appropriations of revenue bond and general obligation proceeds, and so forth.
We can take away for these if needed. Okay, House Finance back on record at 3:11 p.m. And we had some questions about amendment number 3 with Ray Marks. I think it sounds like technical and conforming changes. Sounds like it's a minor thing that can be fixed. But Representative Josephson, maybe if you have any comments.
I don't, I got a 101 lesson and understand the process a little better. I am inclined to maintain my objection, however.
Okay, thank you. Representative Handy, did you also have the comments?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, do we have any further questions or comments? Representative Edgman, did you have anything?
To the bill sponsor, if I may.
Sure, Representative Edgman.
Could you once again, Representative Stapp, and you articulated a moment ago, but the appropriations for the cost of managing Alaska Permanent Fund, can you sort of rephrase why we need to put that into the Constitution, that phrase?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Josephson. So it was my intent to exempt the current structure management fees that the Alaska Fund Corporation uses to pay their investment bankers. The concept would be if the permanent fund, which is tied to global growth, grows faster than the state economy itself, which actually has been true in recent years, then the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation costs itself would cannibalize our ability to actually appropriate the revenue we generate from them. So you don't want your permanent fund corporation, let's say it's spinning off $4 billion now, but let's say in 10 years it's spinning off $10 billion. So if the cost of spinning out $10 billion for, say, state government and dividends is under our appropriation limit, we're effectively cannibalizing our ability to appropriate our own revenue. So that's why we would want the management fees for the administration of the fund itself, just like I've done so under our retirement system, like the management fees for the Alaska State Retirement System is exempt from the cap. That would be my argument as to why we would want that.
Representative Benjamin?
Yeah, I get the rationale for the argument, I suppose, but I'm sitting here pondering just the prescriptive nature of this language going in into the Constitution. I've got the Constitution in front of me, and I'm trying to, sort of have the two side by side here in front of us. But I'm going to ponder a little bit more, and I'll decide how I'm going to vote when the time comes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions on Amendment Number 3? Okay, hearing none, the objection, I believe, was maintained, Representative Josephson. So with that, if there is nothing else to come from the committee, closing wrap-up comments, Representative Stapp?
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster, members of the committee. Yeah, I would just say that, again, the subject to the appropriation limit is the language portion that we're talking about in the Constitution. My argument would be it is much more efficient and beneficial for the state that we didn't, we want the fees that are utilized to take our PMV draw or to take our ERA draw for whatever purpose we choose not to count against us in the event of appropriation limit. Because the scenario is if the Alaska Permanent Fund corpus itself grows to, say, $200 billion someday, that fee to administer that asset under management is going to grow as well. And we don't want to limit our own ability to appropriate our own revenue. That makes sense. And if you put the and the same is true of the retirement system. Like if you put the fees that we are charged to our own retirement management system through the ARM board, you're effectively limiting your ability to pay your pension obligation. So that's the concept behind the amendment, just to ensure that that aspect of a known expenditure is not subject to our own appropriating ability. Thank you.
Okay, so the objection is maintained. Madam Clerk, if you could please call the roll for Amendment Number 3.
Representative Galvin?
Yes.
Representative Hannon?
Yes.
Representative Josephson?
No.
Representative Ortez?
Pass.
Representative Colomb?
Yes.
Representative Kronk?
Yes.
Representative Stapp?
Yes.
Representative Tomaszewski?
Yes.
Representative Ortez?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
No.
Representative Foster?
No.
8 yea, 3 nay.
And so on a vote of 8 yeas, 2 3 nays, amendment number 3 has been adopted. So that next takes us to amendment number 4, Representative Stapp.
I move amendment number 4.
No objection, Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster, members of the Finance Committee. So what amendment number 4 does is it increases the original appropriation limit up to 17% of gross domestic product calculated, and that would give plenty of room in the existing appropriation limit to accommodate for any type of spending available, to include in the event that this legislature appropriated a statutory PFD. Effectively, that amount, as I go to my little slide deck here, I'll tell you the exact number as I try to buy time to flood through my papers to tell the committee how much money that actually would be. But
Mr. Representative, I'll buy you some time.
Yeah. Yeah, go right ahead, Coach Foster. Oh, sorry, Adrian.
Representative Benjamin.
Let's see, you've got three more members you can call me on the table, so we're up to two. So I think the shorthand is by increasing 13 to 17, really sort of increasing the threshold of the cap of the overall GDP that's involved, and I support that. I think that's a good change, and hopefully I've got you enough time.
You absolutely did. Thank you, Co-Chair Edgman, and through the Chair, Co-Chair Foster, to the members of the committee. Yeah, the 17% limit would effectively be a total spend of $7.6 billion. Just as a quick reference, the entirety of the budget, so this would be all appropriations subject to the constitutional spending limit in state GF, $7.6 billion. The current budget that sits in the other body's finance committee, total appropriations, including capital, including permanent fund dividend, at $6.2 billion, right? So this amendment changes to the constitutional appropriation limit, i.e. all the money that we would be allowed to appropriate under a constitutional appropriation limit as of this year to 17% of gross domestic product, which is $7.6 billion. So the argument of doing that is to accommodate most of the feedback I heard from a lot of the folks in the room. The underlying spending cap still has situations in which it would act as a break upon the legislature. If you look at the graphics in the handout I gave you, there's still years where this 17% limit would have limited our ability to appropriate money. It's just a lot less tighter of a limit, and that was based on a lot of the feedback that I heard from members of the committee. And know that, that's it. That's, I think, about it. So I'll take questions.
Representative Benjamin?
But the net effect of it, too, though, through the chair, Representative Stapp, as you've raised the sort of the overall ceiling from, you proposed to raise it from 13 to 17, but you've also got the permanent fund dividend now in under that. So the net effect, the underlying amount, if we didn't have the permanent fund dividend in the cap and it stayed at 13%, you talked to, is there really a net increase?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Edgman, there's a slight net increase, but not really. I mean, this would effectively be, the way this constitutional limit is appropriated currently. The entirety of the statutory dividend has been in formula since the 80s, as well as all the spending that this body has thought of in recent years' budget would fall underneath the appropriation limit up to the cap. So that's conceptually what I did. That way I could ensure that there's enough space in the constitutional limit that we could have what we have for a permanent fund dividend in there, but not pick a arbitrary amount for the PFD. All right, so the cap still is in place. It's appropriations to all available revenue, and it doesn't actually change the overall net picture. It just accommodates for a previous amendment.
Okay. In the queue, I've got Representative Ortiz, Galvin, Josephson, Representative, and Cologne. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. As to the specifics of 17 versus 16 versus 18, I think you said that you used that number to try to incorporate the addition of the permanent fund dividend appropriation. Was that your basic calculation? Was that alone, or was it other factors involved which caused you to change or pick the number 17 or the percent 17?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Ortiz, it was an amalgamation of factors. One, obviously, upward limit in the cap had to be applied to, incorporate the any type of a permanent fund dividend. And two, I wanted to, alleviate some of the concerns that were raised at this committee by representatives like Galvin and Representative Hannon regarding, future expenditures that this legislative body might have, and I didn't want to make the cap a draconian cut, but I also wanted to ensure that at some level we would still have some sort of subject appropriation limit, right? So I call it threading the needle to try to satisfy feedback that I heard from members on the committee. And I think that you'll see, if you look at page one of the handout regarding the amendment, you'll kind of see how it works and how it's, I would call it a happy medium between a previous version of the bill. So.
And in that calculation, I think in the original bill it was calculated on a 2.5% inflation rate, correct? And then, but on that original calculation, did it include an initial increase to the BSA? And is there room for, if we were to insert money into the BSA, is there room for the BSA to continue to grow as? If you put money in the BSA, then that continues to be a continued cost. Is there room for that?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Ortiz. So as I explained earlier, the current version of the budget from the other body is $6.2 billion. This appropriation limit caps it at $7.6 billion. So, obviously GDP increases and changes over time, and so does inflation. Inflation is factored in the calculation. So I guess, unless you're putting more than $1.5 billion into the BSA to this year, then the answer would be yes. But if you were going to do a BSA increase of $1.5 billion, then you'd be subject to the appropriation limit. So.
Thank you.
Okay. Got Representative Galvin.
Thank you. I really appreciate, through the chair, thank you, Representative Stapp. I appreciate the intent of this very much so, as you know. This was part of what I was looking for. I'm still puzzled with that exact number and how you came to it. I'm looking at, not only shoring up education, but I'm concerned about our baseline because we're a new state and we have a desperate need for some, basic things, water, sewer, that's very expensive in some of our communities. Some of our communities are struggling with climate change that's going to require a lot of money, a lot of investment. Broadband is another piece. Our state troopers that we still do not have full. And I know that we want VPSOs and other things as well. So I'm concerned about some of our basic services, not just education, although, as you know, education is certainly my number one concern, and I appreciate that you have added some latitude there, but when I think about the big pieces that we hope will come in place, and we hope that it's going to be federal dollars, but should we get a good run on mining and a great run on oil and gas or other natural resources, and we need to take care of ourselves. We're a young state, and my worry is that I'm just going to tell you I'm not sure that 17% is the right amount, so I'd like you to comment on that if you would. And then the other comment I have is in studying some more about GDP and what we're doing in general with the spending cap, which, like I say, in theory I support once we have ourselves shored up. I'm concerned about the ratings and what I'm hearing about those ratings. So, for example, the groups like Moody and Standard & Poor and Fitch, I've heard that it matters that we have some liquidity, and I'm not sure. I hope you'll address that piece too. So, again, I've got questions about the 17% and whether that's appropriate. This is a lot of big decisions here, and I just want to make sure that we're setting ourselves up right. And I do thank you for your, you know, your being flexible and responsive. Thank you.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair to Representative Galvin, I will try to divide those questions and answer them in detail quickly. So regarding the, I assume you mentioned credit ratings from Moody's, Fitch, and S&P. That was the last question I heard. So it's a good question. So part of the fact that we heard this presentation, House Finance, a couple of times, our bond rating is low in the state of Alaska, mainly because of the nature of inconsistent allocation appropriations, right? So that's not necessarily, that's something, in my opinion, that this bill would fix. It would stabilize how we think about how we create expenditures, and that would actually help lift our credit rating upwards. And a lot of that is just because people never know how this body is going to act when it comes to appropriating money. So applying stability to this would actually help us out in terms of that question. As far as the 17%, to me, that's probably a little high pursuant to constitutional appropriation. I'll tell you why. Because in the event that you lost about $15 in oil price and you had a couple of bad years in investment returns, I don't think you could squeeze enough taxes out of Alaskans to even hit that amount if you had a drop off in oil price and you had bad investment returns. However, I want to make sure that we can have an appropriation limit that is still effective when we have super high oil price years, and that have some sort of limitations for us to think about the next year. But at the same time, the appropriation limit is high enough that we can accommodate a lot of those type of needs that you are getting. So to me, it's a very happy meeting, and it reflects so in the charts in front of you, too. So thanks for the questions.
Follow up, if I may. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm not sure, so they don't see a kind of a summary of big expenditures that we know Alaska should be making if we were to be, you know, that state. And so I think about early learning, for example, and I don't even think we have, well, maybe 1/10 or 1/100 of what other states are spending per capita. So I don't know the number. I appreciate that you've moved up to 17. I just don't know if that's the right number. I think this really requires a lot of thinking. And then my understanding is liquidity is really important when it comes to ratings and having cash availability. So I don't know when something's put into the permanent fund that it's not necessarily liquid. So I want to be careful about that. The other piece that I struggle with, and this is my question to you, Representative Staff, is the GDP piece. It's a very tough thing for Alaska to ascertain appropriately the GDP. A lot of economists have said that. Alaska's a little unique. It's hard to come up to a number when it comes to subsistence work, for example, that the fisheries piece, and if that were to collapse, if we were to lose our hunting or our fisheries and things like that, we would need to inject some money into it. There's no doubt. And so how do we think that through as part of this puzzle? I'm still struggling with that because I'm not sure that we have the right formula that is inclusive of all of the many things that Alaska values, but maybe doesn't fit into this tight box of how we would look at GDP.
Yeah, thanks again for the question. Through the chair, Representative Galvin, I would say most of that I think has been accommodated by some of the changes that I'm making. However, I have one last amendment, and I'll call that the Representative Galvin Amendment, which I rolled to the bottom. I think it's a fair question for our argument. I would say that, keep in mind, it's a five-year rolling average. It's very stable as a metric. And when Director Painter plotted out kind of the state's GDP since the early 80s, I think you can read that. It's actually quite a stable metric. It's actually much more so than our existing statutory limit as far as going up and down. However, those are fair arguments. I would argue that, 70% of GDP is very generous. There's situations that you can see in your graph that would really be our peak spending years in state history that this would apply, and that's kind of the goal, in chopping off the top of the peaks and filling the valleys to be able to provide consistency in revenue as far as appropriation. but I'm happy to show you my last amendment after we get through this one, too.
Okay, we've got Representative Josephson, Representative Colomb, and then Representative Edgman. Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Staff, I'm struck by something you just said, that the limit is very generous. I mean, the whole shooting match is the people's money. So the concept that we're being generous with something that is theirs is interesting to think about. But let me ask you, you said that the entire Senate version, all in, of the budget, not including Fed, of course, is $6.2 billion, and that this proposal, which would not be the statute, it would be the Constitution, the statute would drive the limit. Am I right about that?
Through the chair to Representative Josephson, so the statute, so the limit, it also includes capital expenditures in the other body's budget. So basically, and we'll get into that in the next bill. I didn't want to articulate that because it's a different bill, but I think I can better answer that question when I get into HB 38. So,
well,
at the outset, you said this under this measure, under this amendment, we could spend whatever we wanted. But that's what you said. And I guess what I'm puzzled by is I look at slide one and slide four. Well, it's not numbered. It's number one is numbered number one. The other one is comparable, and it says backup for HER 2 amendment number four. This shows something like 8 years of legislatures in a row. So this would be people elected over four different cycles that would not have complied with this limit, correct?
Through the chair to Representative Josephson, are you referencing years FY7 to, say, FY13? Is that appropriate?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's actually a good intellectual exercise. So thanks, Representative Josephson, for asking the question. So let me clarify a couple of things quickly you mentioned. So I didn't mean to say generous as first in terms of that context. I meant, let's call it like the opposite of draconian, right? So generous. Like my implication of that word wasn't that we were generous in appropriating people. It was just much more amenable. That's probably what I should have said. Second aspect, I think the whatever we want amendment is going to be the last amendment, so that's probably what I was referencing. And now, in terms of the question you have, Representative, thank you again. So I would say that, one of the most interesting things to me about the growth of the state of Alaska's budget from, let's say, FY04 to FY14, is you will realize that folks in this body and the other body effectively tripled the state's operating budget in one decade, from 2004 to 2014. So it's actually a really interesting intellectual exercise to watch that, because I'm not sure if I can think of other states that have ever tripled their operating budget in a single decade. So to me, that begs the question of, hey, maybe if we had had an effective appropriation limit in place, we might have not grown our operational government to such a level that was clearly not sustainable, as the state found out in FY 2015. So,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Josephson?
I'm not going to be voting for the bill, clearly. And I respect Mr. Representative Staff a lot, but he's sort of just given me my answer. Your last statement, Representative Staff, suggests that somehow, given all the inflation that's occurred, if everyone in the state government, because that's the operating budget, it's mostly personnel costs, just made less money, that everything would have been fine. But somehow, way back in 04, we started to pay too much and grow our budget too much, expand employment too much, and that's where the error occurred, spanning the next 7 years. This would have been scores of different legislators coming and going out of office, all reaching the same conclusion, not all, but the majorities, that budgets had to grow. They were very level because prices were down during the Knowles era, and then prices weren't down and need was shown. And this is precisely why I don't believe in the thesis of this bill. I mean, I don't believe that all of these legislators from 2007, mind you, they were socking money away in the CBR, were wrong. I just don't believe it. And that's why I'm just never, with great respect, going to be supporting this bill.
Representative Scott.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Dressa. No, I appreciate it. I think it's always good when you have you can discuss kind of ideological differences in public. I tend to think so. First of all, I want to clarify. I don't think it's because state employees make too much money. I don't think that's a fair assessment. I don't think I ever said that on the record. I would say that it's not really to me about adding services or paying folks. It's more about, hey, in terms of available revenue and available spending, what is an effective rate of growth? And without any type of appropriational constraints on a body, in our state, we've had years of astronomical revenue. Going back to state years like FY13, I think if you look at a comparative state of population, say the state of Wyoming, and you look at the state of Alaska state expenditure versus Wyoming in FY13, we're 6 or 7 times what that state spent. And some of those expenditures are going to be good, but that level of state spending was clearly not sustainable because we are where we are here almost a decade later. So I would argue it's probably better for everyone if we could be more consistent and be able to fund the needs of the state when we have an appropriation limit that's effectual. Because the letdown for folks who work for state government who provided for those services is a lot harsher. It's a lot easier to incrementally increase state spending in a healthy and sustainable way than give folks a bunch of money and provide expectations and have to rip the carpet out from under them. So that would just be my philosophical difference. But I appreciate the question.
Thank you. Representative Cologne.
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair. So a couple questions, Representative Stapp. Thank you for all your work on this. What was the original percentage before House Ways and Means changed it?
Through the chair to Representative Cologne, that feels like a lifetime ago, but I'm going to say it was 14%, and my chief of staff is nodding his head in the back, so I must have got that one right.
Representative Cologne, follow up.
Okay, yeah, I didn't mean it wasn't a gotcha moment. I'm just trying to remember myself. So it went 14, went down to 13, and now we're back up to 17. And what I understand from your answer to Representative Edgman, this 17 is really just accommodating the permanent fund going under the cap from the 14 or the 13?
Through the chair to Representative Cologne, from the 14 with some additional headroom based on some of the other feedback. So if I would have just effectively have done that, it would have been, I think, 16.8%. And again, I'm going to err on the side of caution based on the feedback from some of the committee members. So that's why I chose the number 17. I had to give more freeway and leeway and still have an appropriation limit that we could effectively hit some point in our history, you know.
And follow through the chair. So if our economy starts skyrocketing and the GDP goes up, does the cap go up?
Through the chair, Representative Cologne, absolutely. If the private sector economy starts booming in the state of Alaska, so does our ability to appropriate more revenue.
And one more follow-up. I remember just to Representative Galvin's point about spending, I thought there was, there's a narrow exception for capital or for emergency declarations and capital expenditures, something with a two-thirds vote or something that if people voted that you could spend above the cap. Can you refresh my memory on that?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Cologne, effectively the HCR2 is the constitutional limit. That's it would be the room for the capital spending. So we'll get into the HB38. My next amendment, I call it the spend whatever we like amendment. That would allow, I'll speak to it briefly, I know it's a little out of order, that would basically allow us to spend every penny we ever had if we get a higher vote threshold. And I'll speak to that next for the philosophical discussion. But so the two-thirds vote effective capital appropriation, just to remind you, though, that disaster spending, disaster declaration of spending is outside the limit entirely.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, I've got Representative Edgman, Galvin, and Ortiz. Representative Edgman.
Yes, back to the 17% number that's been proposed in terms of the overall threshold, 70% of the GDP, which is calculated not in Alaska. We don't have that mechanism. It's calculated back east. I can't remember the organization that does it. But my question would be, Representative Stapp, through the chair, to, if somebody were to ask you, gee, that seems kind of arbitrary. How did you pick the number 17? And I compare it to previous debates on Senate Bill 26 and some other work that we did in this committee where we did reams of Monte Carlo simulations about, you know, what the spending might be or what GDP might be, or trying to find that mean in there somewhere and then attach it to, of course, expected growth in population and spending and things like that. I guess before I, through the chair, ask for the answer to the question, I point that out because I think that explains the overall dilemma the legislature has had in terms of arriving at a spending cap. I mean, there have been many attempts to put a spending cap together, but to be able to put something in place that would sort of fit, as Representative Josephson talked about, you know, that explosion spending from the 90s to the 2000s, as you say, that went up three times. I was here in the 90s. We had 98 troopers, I remember, one year. We have 400 troopers now. It went up because oil was $8 to $9 a barrel in the 90s. We didn't have the money to spend. And as soon as the money came about in the early 2000s, in the mid-2000s, and where we're at now, we've been spending money. But I'm always a little defensive when somebody says the legislature year in, year out spends like drunken sailors. And I say, look at how much we've incurred in debt. Look at how much money we've actually put away in special appropriations to the permanent fund. And agency spending, by and large, with insurance increases, health care, energy costs, personnel costs that are about 70% of an agency's costs, all that stuff are sort of uncontrollable facets of spending. We do our best. But in my view, if this bill goes to the other body, I see them hiring third-party analysis to do very intricate analysis of the GDP projections and also of sort of projecting where we might be in 10 years based on population growth, but also population decline, because some of the spending of our agency's budgets are tied to actual people. And by the way, our population increased substantially from the 90s into the 2000s as well, driving Medicaid and education and a bunch of other spending. But back to the question about the arbitrary nature of 17, how did that come about? And if I were to tell one of my constituents, oh no, that was backed by analysis, that's a number tied to analytics. It's not a number tied to we think it's going to work. Because, I mean, in all fairness, closing, this is the number you're going to face on the floor when this thing gets to the floor.
So. Yeah, through the chair, to Representative Edgerman, no, I appreciate the question, right? So, obviously, this is another iteration of the bill. So, as far as the GDP percentage numbers, there's several kind of methods that I looked at when I was thinking about how to make this amendment appropriate. Think a lot of that is, hey, looking at other states and seeing what states spend on their GDP that have different types of revenues. Looking at the federal government, I was asked a question at this committee the other day last time I presented the bill. There's the Great Depression scenario where the federal government obviously controls monetary policy, so they deficit spent during the high use because you don't have to balance a budget at the federal money. You can deficit spend. So I looked at other comparisons of that, and then I looked at the historic trends in the state of Alaska spending, and I asked questions to folks, and I worked on with my staff. And a 17% seemed the most appropriate number after kind of amalgamating all the factors that would still have some sort of limiting factor that would not be too, let's call it, that's the old analogy of the, you know, the too hot, too cold soup and just right, you know. That's a conception what I got. As far as reflecting back on the growth of government, I want to reiterate, I didn't mean to insinuate that folks were drunken sailors and spending money. I don't think I said that. But I would say that the purpose behind some sort of self-imposed limit on appropriation is not necessarily to not spend money on certain needs that the state has, but to ensure that things that we opt to spend money on are sustainable. So, like I said, sustainable, consistent, stability. We hear that all the time at the committee when folks come ask us for money. One of the biggest issues, I think, with education funding that they brought up to not only members of this finance committee but other members in the building is it is more important to have stable, consistent funding than the potential of large increases fall off by large cliffs. So that's the purpose behind the concept of the bill. Thanks.
Thank you.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair, I'd like to, if I could, touch a little bit on what we heard from Representative Colom, which I think is important to appreciate, that there is this stopgap, if you will, of a disaster opportunity, and that we know the governor then, should they decide something is a disaster, we can go beyond the limits. I think that's important. What I struggle with is the definition of disaster, because the governor, I think we ascertained the last meeting that that a fiscal disaster would not be part of that. And then I think about the legislation that we are looking at now, that regarding commitment and mental health beds and our lack thereof, and you know, we're looking at perhaps needing more than 100 mental health beds if certain legislation passes. And I'm not saying that it should or should not. I just think it's important that we recognize that's not considered a disaster either when we strengthen our laws, and then we don't have a way of upholding them. That seems to me a disaster. It seems to be a disaster that we have 81% of our kids at kindergarten 1 or 2 years behind. That's a disaster. And so I worry that getting two-thirds vote on anything can be pretty tricky in this body, and even though, because of what I heard from you, Representative Stapp, and others, that we don't want too much government. At the same time, these services, especially if we're going to have a functional education system and a functional public safety system and healthcare system, we are in a state right now where I know that if we are to be a strong Alaska, we're going to need two-thirds of vote for a lot of things, and I'm concerned about that.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Galvin. No, I appreciate the question. Again, arguments are always good. I think so. To me, I think the constitutional limit set at 17% does provide a pretty generous amount of headroom in the ability that we somehow magically have another $1.5 billion to spend on stuff. I think that within that limit, we can prioritize our existing budgetary needs and desires to keep up with the demands of folks in our state. I think we can prioritize conceptually looking at how we encourage our private sector to continue to develop and drive economic growth in our state. And I would also note that a lot of the items you're looking at would probably fall better under HB 38 as far as the next poll we're going to talk about. I would say that in the event you felt that there was not enough wiggle room between the statutory limit and the constitutional limit, you can raise the statutory limit closer to the constitutional limit. So that's how I would answer that question. But I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, next we've got Representative Ortiz.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. And I do want to move along. The afternoon is going quickly by. But I want to refer back to the comments made by Representative Colom in relationship to, she asked the question. So if the GDP starts to increase significantly, then that would allow us to increase our expenditures. But I want to remind everybody that only if there's some sort of revenue tied to that increase in economic activity or increase in the GDP, because right now, if we were to pass this but not pass any revenue measures, then while we theoretically could increase our expenditures to meet the increased demands, with which economic growth would bring more population, bring more demand for services, more demand for education, more demand for this, more demand for that. But if you don't have the revenue, then you really can't. Even though you could, you don't, because you don't have the revenue. So I'm a little bit nervous about moving forward with this without having the revenue pieces in place. That's my concern. So
yeah, through the chair to Representative Ortiz. No, it's actually kind of the answer to most of the kind of scenarios people articulate. So The truth is, most of the problems occur when you lack revenue, not necessarily when you're subject to appropriation. So my argument is the underlying bill, the beauty about the spending cap, especially indexing it to gross domestic product, is in the event that you're ever going to levy a tax, a broad-based tax on the state of Alaska, right, it is much better to have a robust private sector that is growing to better distribute and better absorb that tax than an anemic private sector that is dying, right? So my argument would be, hey, in the event that you're looking to inevitably raise revenues, and my argument that that's a different conversation than the one that we're currently having here in the Finance Committee, but always better to tax a healthy person than a sick one. So that's how I would say.
Okay, we've got Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Foster. So, Representative Stapp, my questions aren't directly to Amendment 4, the 17%, but we're in this area talking about what's covered under it. And I'm going to line 8, and the phrasing there is real domestic product. And in my mind, taking out government spending, let's say we had a carbon tax credit program. Does that count as government spend or private sector GDP?
Through the chair to Representative Hannon, so I'm probably going to ask for a clarification, but my understanding is if we're talking about the offsets, that would be actually revenue and not an expenditure. But if you could clarify that, I think that
that's what I'm asking.
Okay. Yeah, through the chair to Representative Hannah. Yeah, that would actually count in favor of revenue. So it wouldn't have any effect under the appropriation limit. That money would be revenue. It would be kind of similar to what Representative Ortiz talked about a broad-based tax. So that would just be more revenue you could appropriate under the cap.
Okay.
Follow up?
In the phrasing, real domestic product, does real have a legal... GDP is a phrase we've all heard, and of course, in definition, it includes government spend. So when we take government spend out of it, I'm not sure what the word real that in this resolution would be placed in our Constitution, what its meaning is, and how it influences that definition.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Hannah. Yeah, real GDP is a measurement of economic output, incorporating CPI inflation, right? So we're taking inflationary pressure into account. So that's the difference between real GDP and, of course, the bill, as you kind of mentioned, real GDP minus government spend. That's how we're making the calculation.
One more.
Hello?
And does that government spend include taking out all federal money as government spend? So does that include the wages or military went out in Fairbanks and requisitioned $500,000 worth of groceries for a troop exercise? Is that government spend or not government spend?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Hannon, that's actually a really good question. I'm glad you brought it up. So consumption spending is captured within a gross domestic product, but we're counting it once instead of counting it twice. So, for example, the money that we would give the folks, we're not counting, but when they actually put it in the domestic economy, we are counting it, if that makes sense. So that's, you're counting the gross economic output. So that means when somebody, say a state employee has money and they buy stuff, when they buy stuff, we're counting it, if that makes sense.
Hello?
Thank you, Chair Foster. But I'm asking when the government, so the government entity, the Army is buying it, or state, the Alaska Marine Highway System does a lot of local government purchases. They need to go buy a park, they buy some groceries in a community. Is that government spend, or is that part of the consumer multiplier that we're counting?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Hannon. So at the point of consumption, we consider that GDP, right? But the concept about not including government spend is we don't want a mechanism that allows us to basically count it twice. So, for example, if I give a state government $100 and then they turn around and spend that $100 on like a grocery store items, okay? If I included government spend, I count $100 I'm giving to the government from the government plus the $100 they're spending on domestic economy, right? So in reality, the only thing that's happening there that's economic output is the purchasing of the actual goods. So I'm counting the purchasing of the goods. I'm not counting the money I'm giving a government employee from the government, right? I think I'm articulating that pretty simply. So if that, does that make sense?
Representative Hammond?
I guess I'm still always, because I'm not, thank you, Chair Foster, I'm not worried about it when the state agency, you keep going to the consumer bought it, but I'm saying the state frequently is buying things from the consumer economy. And so I'm just.
Yeah, I think I can clarify real quickly, Chair Foster. Yeah, so when they're purchasing it, it counts to gross domestic output. But if we were to consider, so we appropriate money to the government then buys things. So if we were to count the appropriation to the government and then count it again, the things the government buys with the money we appropriate them, we would be giving ourselves a tool to raise our own spending limit. So the only thing that matters in terms of private sector output, in terms of GDP, is the actual, you know, sale of the good itself. So that's probably the best way I could answer that. So thanks.
Yeah, and Chair Foster, the issue around the GDP measure has been a problem for me in contemplating this, and I continue to think about, and I'm going to use the SNAP expenditures as an example. The problem in many of the communities that I served previous to this term when my district was shrunk down, but I had three outlying communities, very small communities, and as those local grocers have articulated, the problem with that restriction and slowdown in the government spend in delivering that is they didn't have the consumers coming through the door. And even though it was a government check helping people buy groceries, now their grocery store couldn't keep the shelves filled because there was nobody buying them and they couldn't afford to buy the next week's groceries. And so I'm concerned about us truncating the government spend from the economy because in our state, they are very tightly connected.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. And along the same lines, I'm thinking about all of the work that DNR does to bring in revenue. And we've already exempted, it sounds like, the permanent fund, the expenditures of permanent fund in raising funds. So I think that was in one of the amendments we just had, and I'm not trying to muddy this issue, but it seems to me that we are, in some of our projects, there are pretty big expenditures from the state to make sure that we're raising revenue. Similarly, it's a different type of revenue, but it's certainly revenue for our state, especially in natural resources. And so I wonder if some more, there may be more space for other exemptions, kind of thinking along the same lines. I think about the carbon projects, and some of them will require a substantial amount of state expenditures. And so I guess thinking along those lines and trying to be consistent, I wondered if we should be in consideration of some of our Department of Natural Resource projects as well.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Galvin. So I'm going to make a request, I think, that we get through Amendment 4, and then I can reveal the amendment I wrote down to the bottom, which is going to handle the, I call it the spend whatever you want amendment. So,
Representative Toloshevsky.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Through the chair, just a couple comments on some of the discussion that's been happening. And I appreciate all the discussion. It's very good. And just want to thank Representative Stapp for all the hard work him and his team have put together to make this happen. Some think the cap is too low. Some think it's too high, right? So there's this happy medium that maybe, you know, I mean, you know, I can't always look into the future. None of us can, but you know, there's a happy medium there that we definitely can look at. And a common thread I hear in a lot of arguments through a lot of bills is about the population of Alaska and the out-migration. I keep hearing that. And I just went back and looked. 2016 was the population high for Alaska. We had 742,575 people, 2016. That was the high in our state. Today we have last year, as of 2022, the latest statistics, we have 733,583. So basically, over the last 6 years, we've lost 9,000 people. Really only represents 1.2%. So, you know, I understand that, but it's almost the average of the last 10 years. The average of the last 10 years is 736,000 people, and we're at 733. So I guess that one's just something to think about. And then as far as a cap without revenue, some people say it's better for, you know, that we're going to need revenue. We should have a cap to institute a cap without revenue. Well, on the other hand, some might say we can't do revenue without the cap. So, you know, it's back to that happy medium where, you know, everybody's going to have to give a little. And so I can hope that we can, you know, each give a little and come together and do something towards this fiscal policy, you know, for the state, because, you know, that's what we've been talking about. Everybody's been talking about that. This is just one part of the fiscal policy that we really need, and so I will be supporting this amendment. Thanks.
Okay. Any further questions, comments on amendment number 4, Representative Josephson?
Just that, through the chair, thank you. Just that the fiscal policy working group recommended that things happen concurrently. They were rather insistent on that. Mr. Chairman, could I have a brief at ease,
please? Sure. Representative Josephson, brief at ease. on record at 4:12 p.m. And I think we are missing a couple folks, so I'm going to talk very slowly and say that we have with us in the audience Representative Sumner. Representative Sumner hails from the great city of...
He does a lot of GDP spending this year.
That is very true.
We are, let's see here, maybe if my staff can check on the one one more person that we have here. And so, with that, can you check to see if we've got one more person out there? Let's see, I think Representative Josephson, you had asked for a brief at ease. Are you good?
I am good. And, although we're waiting on someone, I think I had the objection. I'm willing to lift it. But I don't need to do that if we're waiting on someone.
Wrap up, please.
I think, yes, let's go to wrap up first, and then we'll go to the lifting of the objection. Representative Stapp.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Just in wrap up, what this amendment actually does is it increases the 13% limit to 17% to accommodate for greater mobility to be able to appropriate funds, right? So that's in lieu of the previous change that we made in another amendment. I would say that in the event that it was enacted at 13%, including the appropriations, and this amendment did not pass, you would have to cut a bunch of things out of the budget. Therefore, I would recommend passing this amendment personally.
Okay. And I believe, Representative Josephson, you remove your objection. Are there any further objections to amendment number 4? Seeing no further objections, amendment number 4 has been adopted. So that takes us back to amendment number 1. Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I move amendment number 1.
Okay, Representative Stapp.
Okay, so back on my train of thought. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair to the members of the Finance Committee. So what is amendment number 1? That I ripped off of my packet and handed to somebody else so they could read, so I'll do it off the top of my memory. Amendment number 1 is, thank you. Thank you, Representatives Edgman and Representative Hannon. So amendment number 1, to address a lot of the things that the folks in this committee talked about the ability to appropriate money. So I gave it some thought. I don't know how I actually feel about this amendment that I'm offering, so I think it's a little funny that I'm offering it, but what this amendment would effectively say is, in the event that two-thirds of both legislative bodies agreed on spending as much money as humanly possible for the capital appropriation, if enacted, this amendment would give the legislature the ability to appropriate as much money on a capital project that they have. In the event that you had a two-thirds vote, which is effectively the same threshold that would be required to override a governor veto, so I don't particularly think that that's necessarily a great idea, but I'd like to hear what the members of the committee think of the proposed amendment.
Thank you. Any questions of the committee on amendment number 1?
Yes.
Representative Kronk.
Thank you, the chair. Just check in. Two-thirds vote, the same as the veto.
I mean, if we're just... through the chair, Representative Kronk. Sorry, I misspoke. It's been a long Finance Committee meetings. Yeah, three quarters.
Okay. Any further discussion on amendment number 1? Seeing none, Representative Hannon.
So, thank you, Chair Foster. Trying to understand the amendment with the changes... So it's two-thirds vote, capital improvement, amount equal to 13% of the average calculated under this section. Does that average change because we've changed to 17% earlier, or does that remain 13%?
Representative Stapp?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Hannah, that amount changes because of the previous amendment to 17. Actually, correction, briefities.
Briefings. House Finance back on record at 4:17 p.m. Representative Scott.
Yeah, through the chair to represent him. Good catch. That should effectively change that 13% to 17 based on the previous amendment. I do want to clarify something under the record. What this amendment does, it still allows two-thirds to appropriate for capital spending, but in the event that you hit that in 13, it says in the current amendment, I'd like to conceptually amend that to 17 here in a bit, to a three-quarters vote, the same threshold to override a veto, you could effectively appropriate whatever you'd like with the three-quarters vote. And that's how this amendment works. So thanks for the opportunity to clarify.
Would you like to, before we get too far into the weeds on all the other questions, would you like to make a conceptual amendment, just change 13 to a 17?
We'll get I'll go ahead and do that. I'd like to make a conceptual amendment for a conforming change from the previous amendment from 13 to 17%. That's in line at 20.
Great. On page one?
On page one, correct.
Okay. And are there any objections to changing that 17? Representative Hannon, object?
I'm going to object because it also appears in line 11. Of your amendment.
Yeah, through the chair to the members of the Finance Committee, we'll add line 11.
And 20.
Eddie's?
And I just want to say really quick, I think this is something that would be covered by conforming technical changes made by legislative, but we'll take refinance. Yep. House Finance back on record, 4:19 p.m. Representative Staff.
Through the chair to Representative Hannon. So, yeah, that line already says delete, Representative Second. But I appreciate thorough review of the amendment.
Great. Representative Hannon, do you maintain your objection, Representative?
I'll remove my objection on that.
Okay. So, with that, conceptual amendment number one to amendment number one has been adopted to change it from 13 to 17 on line 20. And with that, we'll go to questions. We have Representative Galvin, Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Just a clarification, if you will. So this actually, I think, resolves some of the questions around, let's say we pass a bill and we know we need 100 more beds for mental health because we're committing if we find recurring violent crimes of certain offenders, et cetera, and we know we don't have the beds. And so we need a capital expenditure. If we could get to the threshold of two-thirds, and so that would take care of building or coming up with whatever we need to do to make those beds possible. My question is, it would not help us, though, with the staffing of this, would it? Or is that would that fall under something else, and where would that fall?
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Hannon, I'm going to read the text for you if I could, Co-Chair Foster. It says, line 22, page 1, it says, upon an affirmative vote of three-fourths of the membership of each house, the legislature may appropriate an amount in excess of the limits under A or B of this section, right? So that would mean that if you were able to obtain the, let's say, the approval of three-fourths of each body, you could appropriate money above the constitutional spending limit. That's why I kind of call it the spending whatever you want amendment. In the event that you can garner a vote threshold that's high enough to override a governor's veto, i.e. a three-quarter vote.
Representative Galvin?
Thank you. A quick follow-up. So you made a decision then in the drafting of this and thinking it through that capital spend would be a two-thirds threshold, but in terms of the people to keep those buildings maintained and such, that you'd change the threshold to the three-quarters. And I just wanted to ask what your thinking was around that.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Galvin, so I'll clarify something real quickly, too. So this is to exceed the constitutional limit, which already would require an underlying three-quarter vote. So at the statutory limit, which is the next HB 38, you can appropriate any appropriation under the statutory limit, whatever you want. You can appropriate capital and operating under that. The purpose of the constitutional amendment, HCR 2, is the space above the underlying statutory amendment, trying to reserve for capital appropriation. If for whatever reason, my thoughts actually regarding this amendment would be something like the gas line. In the event that the state had to do a one-time super large appropriation to build the gas line of, say, $6 or $8 or $10 billion or something like that, there would be a mechanism in which you could actually make a singular massive appropriation. My thought was that's probably the only spending item you'd ever get three quarters of the entire body to agree on for an appropriation that would be above $7.6 billion. I will say, however, I have a lot of reservations about this personal amendment, but that's why I offered it for the purpose of discussion.
Okay, Representative, I'm just making sure I'm following my Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, returning to your chart number one from the Legislative Finance Division, I see, for example, in FY 8 and 9, well, let's look at FY 9 and FY 10 and FY 14. Without a three-quarter vote, the legislature could not have spent what it wanted to on those operating budgets that year, right?
Through the chair to Representative Josephson, so those particular years would have fallen above the current constitutional limit version of the budget as amended that we're working on. So in order to reach that level of spending in those years, you would have to adopt this amendment and then obtain a three-quarter vote, a three-quarter vote. I did articulate that properly.
It strikes me that a legislator may want, not that we trade things in this building, but a legislator may want a capital item to find that enticing. And that would have the effect of growing the capital budget. Is that possible?
Through the chair, Representative Joseph, that's absolutely possible. That's why I'm not super sold on the amendment that I'm offering for the committee, because I think that the purpose behind an appropriation limit is to have some sort of hard cap that you effectively can't exceed. Although based on discussions of folks, I did want to entertain the notion that, hey, you could in theory place a valve in this bill that would allow this body to spend whatever it wanted in the event that you had a three-quarter vote. I personally think that's a terrible idea, because I think that incentivizes bad behavior. And I think not limiting our ability to spend has kind of helped create the current situation that we're in. However, I wanted to hear what the members of the committee thought. So,
okay. Representative, you good, Representative Josephson?
Yes. I mean, just some quick comment. The sponsor said, the not limiting spending has put us in the position we're in. We're the only state without counties, except for Louisiana, which has parishes. We're the only state without a broad-based tax, and those have got to be factors. Thank you.
Representative Benjamin?
Yeah, just a little bit of a chuckle on my face, because as everyone around this table knows, to get to a three-quarter supermajority, there are political factions that will require more spending to break the spending cap. And so I don't say that to make light of Representative Stapp's efforts, because I think you're generally trying to make this work and to accommodate all the different sort of perspectives out there. But again, I'm being redundant, but this underlines why a spending cap has been so elusive. So, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cole.
Thank you, Chair, through the chair. So on the surface, I don't support the amendment. A little bit about what Representative Edgman was talking about, this can create a lot more issues within the body that I think is worth. I also believe in having a hard cap on it. And just to clarify, I think it was said before that, if you support the cap, you don't want government, or you want to limit government. That's not why I'm supporting it. I'm supporting it so government is living within its means, just like everybody else. So when you have booms, hopefully if you're managing things right, you're saving savings for the downtime or for the crisis or the things that are coming. And so I just like I like that it stabilizes and it becomes dependable, because that's what everybody in every sector that ever has ever come into my office or in committees saying. They're all asking us, they would need this be they need the stability and the predictability. And so this has a lot of implications, I think, that I'm not really comfortable with. But thank you for offering it. It's a good discussion.
Okay. I don't see any further questions, so wrap up, Representative Stout.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster. And I appreciate Co-Chair Edgman's comments. I appreciate Representative Joseph's comments, and I appreciate Representative Colomb's comments. I would tend to agree. I tend to think that, to Representative Edgman's comments, that this type of provision, I think, would indeed incentivize more spending. I think it would incentivize folks scheming to effectively be able to bust through a limit. And in lieu of those comments, I'd like to withdraw amendment number one.
Okay, amendment number one has been withdrawn. So with that, I would like to recess. Hopefully we'll have an answer on when we're going to come back here, preferably within the next half hour. We'll send an email out. So with that, House Finance will be recessed at 4:28 p.m.